My name's Andy, and I'm one of the ministers here at the moment. While Trev is away, I've been left to man the ship, and thankfully things have been smooth sailing so far. So let's pray that continues. We're in a series at the moment where we're working through the Gospel of Mark, and today's passage follows the passage that our student minister who came up and visited us, James McClure, he preached on the feeding of the 5,000. Today, we're looking at the story that follows on from that. And it's a bit of a shame that we didn't get the feeding of the 5,000 read at the same time, because the two stories are so closely knitted together. You might have heard some of the language, you know, they didn't understand about the loaves, but we didn't read about the loaves. So know that this story is so tightly connected to the wider story. And I'm looking forward to coming again and preaching next week as well, where we get the next story, which will contrast to today's story. Well, today we see that following on from this feeding of the thousand, the first word we have in our Bible reading is immediately. So instantly we're onto something new. And immediately Jesus made his disciples get into a boat and go ahead of him to Bethsaida. Which, if we have look, sorry, why isn't it working? There we go. That's where we're going. So feeding of the 5,000 there. And he's sending on his disciples to go up to the north of the lake to Bethsaida. Now, it seems like the plan from what we see in the story is that the long-term plan is to get to Gennesaret on the other side of the lake, and they're going to follow the coastline along. But later that night, we hear in the Bible story that the boat was in the middle of the lake. Right there. The boat had gone off course. After Jesus had left his disciples, he went up onto a mountainside to pray, and Jesus saw the disciples in the middle of the lake. So that's where Jesus is. He's up on the mountainside, and he's looking over, and he can see them on the lake. Why they were in the middle of the lake was because a huge wind had blown them away from the coast, probably coming from that northeast. And we read in the NIV version, which we read today, that the disciples were straining at the oars. The ESV talks about making headway painfully. Other versions, the Holman Standard Christian Bible says he saw them being battered as they rowed. And this is all because the translation from the Greek literally was they were harassed. They were tormented, which is a really strange word to use when there are other words that could have been used to just say there was a wind against them. And he uses those words, but Mark also uses this word, tormenting. It's sort of a bit of an indicator that something deeper is being talked about here. This illustrative language that Mark uses gives us a picture of the anguish and the toil of the disciples as they were in this scene. Mark doesn't use lots and lots of words. He is straight to the chase about what exactly is happening. He speaks with a very fast-paced nature. He uses words like immediately. And what we'll see is that the story goes by so quickly that it's important for us to take some time and actually notice what is actually happening at each point. What we see in God's word is we see these words like immediately the disciples get in the boat. And after leaving them, Jesus goes up to pray. Later that night, the boat's in the middle of the lake. Shortly before dawn, Jesus walks to them. A lot has happened, but there's not many words that Mark's used to tell us what's happened. But what we need to see is the little details that are in here. Jesus saw them in the middle of the lake for hours He left them before sunset, and by the time he gets on the lake, it's just before dawn. All night has happened. So what's Jesus doing? Why is just Jesus seeing his disciples straining and struggling and doing nothing? Sure, it might have taken him a while to walk up the mountain and walk back down and then walk across the lake. But it just seems like a lot of time has passed. Sometimes when we're left in a situation for a time, it's a time of working things out, a teaching point. Sometimes in our lives, in our struggles, our day-to-day struggles, if things found a solution quickly, we might not learn from these things. But when we are given time to try different things, I can imagine the disciples thinking, what are we going to do? We could start rowing in this direction. Maybe we could go with the wind, or maybe we can go against the wind. And you can imagine them arguing on the boat what they ought to do. And Jesus just lets them do that for a time. I wonder if you've had trials like this in your life, where Jesus has taken his time to come to your aid. Perhaps like the disciples, we're so focused on the task at hand that we're straining at the oars, only to find that we make no progress. In our lives, there are countless things that harass us or oppress us or oppose us. I've been thinking of the things that have been going on in my life and people that I've been pastoring, and sometimes the feelings of regret or shame cause us to try harder to be perfect. We think of all the things we ought to have done in the past, and if only I try that little bit harder, then I'll be able to make up for lost ground. We might be that overbearing parent or grandparent, trying to do what we didn't do in former times, make up for those past errors. Or another scenario might be the feeling of envy, that we might strive to keep up with the Joneses. We must have what everyone else has. Is it a stretch to link the disciple situation on the water with the various situations we have in our lives? I think not. For Jesus uses this physical situation to address something far, far deeper, something of spiritual significance. The purpose of Jesus coming to his disciples wasn't primarily to rescue them from the storm or the wind that was facing them. Though we know that when Jesus did come, the wind did die down. No, Jesus' purpose in coming to his disciples was to reveal who he was. And we get some really clear indicators if we are able to step back into Mark's day, where we might be able to understand some of what he was using for his original readers. First, Jesus is walking on a lake. We should not let that pass us by. That is not normal. I don't know if you've seen anyone walking on a lake, but if you have, it's probably that the water's shallow. Jesus walks where only God can walk. Now, you might know that Peter does actually walk on the water in this situation in another gospel account, but that's only because of what God has enabled him to do. But this unmistakably identifies Jesus with God. Think back to creation when the Spirit of God hovered over the waters. Here, Jesus in bodily form defies the laws of physics. The second thing we see is Jesus is about to pass them by. You might think that's weird. I thought it was weird. Why would Jesus like see them struggling? Oh, that's nice, and just keep on walking. It sounds like he's like the priest or the Levite in the Good Samaritan story that walks by. You'd think that doesn't seem to add up why Jesus would do that. But if you were a reader back in Mark's day, this word pass by might bring to memory other things from the Old Testament as what we would see about the language of pass by. Particularly the language of pass by from the story of Job. Now we find it in a few places in the Bible where God's Spirit passed by. But in the book of Job, particularly Job 9, 10 and 11, we read this. He performs wonders that cannot be fathomed, miracles that cannot be counted. When he passes me, I cannot see him. When he goes by, I cannot perceive him. This story follows on from this miracle, the feeding of the 5,000. And what we find out in our story is that the disciples could not understand what was happening with the feeding of the 5,000. Many people just saw this as a miracle. This teacher who's come did some amazing wonder. Surely Mark has Job, this passage in mind as he recounts this encounter with Jesus. At first, the disciples are unable to perceive him, but Jesus uses this moment to do something different. From the revelation of God in former times, where he would guard his identity and who he was, Jesus intends to take this moment to make the mysterious and unfathomable God of Job now visible and recognizable to his disciples. The next thing that we see is the words, "It is I." Now you might think, okay, what's that? It's just saying, hey, it's me, Jesus. But the same word that's used here in the Greek is the same what we see in the Old Testament of God saying, I am. I am who I am. When Moses asks God, what's your name? What am I to tell the Israelites? God says, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. And Jesus uses this same phrase, but in the Greek, it is I, to point not just to say, it's me, Jesus, but he's identifying himself with God. This would have been unmistakable for Jesus identifying himself as God. And lastly, the fourth thing that we see that proves that Jesus is God is that as he climbs into the boat, the wind dies down. And this recalls what happened in chapter 4 in Mark's gospel. This is the second time the disciples have been in a boat where nature has been impacting them. The last time they woke Jesus up while they're in the middle of a storm. And Jesus spoke to the wind and the waves, and the wind and the waves died down. Perhaps this moment as Jesus hops in the boat and the wind dies down is a reminder to the disciples to see how Jesus has been revealing who he is to his disciples all this time. He's not just a good teacher. He's not just rabbi, but he's God. But unfortunately, the disciples still didn't get it. They didn't understand about the miracles, particularly about the loaves, the feeding of the 5,000. And they couldn't figure out just what happened to them. They were completely amazed. But their hearts were hardened. Our hearts can be hardened in a number of ways. We can harden our hearts through sinful rebellion. Just saying, nope, I'm not going God's way. Sometimes we can harden our hearts through bitterness, through different circumstances, where we think it's not fair. Or like in this case, through striving in our own strength, ignorant of God's presence, his posture towards us and his power. In our struggle, in our striving, know that Jesus is willing to draw near to you. in our struggle and our striving, see what Jesus' posture is towards his disciples. It's not one of reprimand, but one of revelation. As we go our own way, he wants to bless us with knowing who he is. And in our struggle and in our striving, we should seek the power of Jesus who has no limits. When we take our eyes off Jesus, Jesus wants us to see him again, to see him for who he is. But let's not lose sight of who he is by what he does for us. After Jesus revealed to his disciples who he was, they arrive at Gennesaret on the other side of the lake with apparent ease. Once they land in Gennesaret, they are flooded with people who recognize Jesus. His reputation as a healer and miracle worker precedes him. But his divine identity is somewhat still hidden from the crowds. Queues of people flock to Jesus in the hope that they will receive blessing from him, from merely being in his presence, from just a touch of the edge of his cloak. Jesus obliges to their begs of mercy, for all who touched his cloak were healed. But it's obvious that they don't get the big picture of who Jesus is fully. Who is Jesus to us? Is he a means to an end? Or is he the main thing? Is he the central thing in all our lives? Central in this Bible story is who Jesus is. He is God. He's creator of heaven and earth. He is sustainer of all things. He is the compassionate God who seeks to reveal himself to his people and who comes to their aid and brings salvation. Jesus is more than what he brings us. He is God who has come to earth to dwell with his people, to bring together what was once separated back into union. This is one of the great gifts the church has, union with Christ. His riches are our riches. His identity is our identity. Jesus is family. And that is good news. And that is what we need to hold on to as we go out into our week. When we're distracted by life's pressures that might oppose us, might set us sailing off in different directions, what is going to help us stay on course is a true knowledge of who Jesus is. To not feed into the lies about who he is, that he might have rejected us, but one who always seeks to draw near to his people. This is the good news of today's story.